Thank you, Phil, for leading us in a very different service from what we would normally have, but a service that was quiet, allowed us to just breathe, just step back and think about who we are with God. There was good reason for all of that. If I were to ask you how many of you over the last few weeks would want to say that life has just got too many things going on, life is just simply too busy, I suspect an awful lot of you would have your hands up. Probably most. But how many of us would be prepared to give up some of the convenience and the comforts that come with that incredibly busy life in order to have a simpler, less stressful way of living? Last week, we were at the school, and in our kind of round table service, we were having a discussion. I invited you to think about those things that brought refreshment to life, those things that just allowed you to breathe and just enjoy things. And you came up with all sorts of things like taking the dog for a walk, listening to birds singing, going for a walk, that sort of thing. Well, then we moved on, and we went on to consider what really makes a healthy, balanced lifestyle, and a particularly healthy, balanced spiritual lifestyle. And you came back with all sorts of things. And here they all are. Quick reminder. These are the 18 things that you came up with on these two sheets. And what I said I would do is I would go away and have a look at them, and I've grouped them into kind of themes that they obviously fit into, into five sessions, which I'm going to look at over the next few weeks. Now, one of the major ones, really obvious ones that you came up with, was spending quality time in communion, talking in conversation with God. Well, I could certainly look at that. In fact, we're going to look at that next week. But it struck me as I looked at that list that there was one more thing we needed to look at first before we even think about spending quality time with God. And it's this second one on the list. Declutter. Simplifying our life. And that's what I want to look at this morning. And it's for that reason that our service has been a little bit different. The theme today, decluttering, it's why we don't have the overhead, which we always have. It's why I've done no PowerPoint. There is no computer on at the back. We decided we'd just step back a little bit, do things more simply. I wonder when, where, and how God has tapped you on the shoulder and you've missed it because you've been too busy, too distracted to listen. That's what I want to think about. And the way I'm going to do this is actually by having quite a simple sermon, a much more reflective sermon. And I want to ask, first of all, to look at what the real issue is, what all this clutter is. That becoming aware of that alone is a major way to step forward. And I want to ask, well, why is that important? And then maybe throw out some challenges. Begin that conversation for all of us that you can take away with, because it's a very personal thing. So, decluttering. First of all, it's a real buzzword at the moment. People are talking about decluttering, something that people are aware of, because in our society, people are becoming increasingly aware that we are in hectically busy. More and more people are just up to here with the stuff of life. We used to think that more is best. People are beginning to now think differently. I'm intrigued to notice that there's an advert. I noticed it for the first time this week on TV from the Peugeot car company. Don't know whether you've seen it. The Peugeot 308. And the key factor, one of the key factors that they want to raise about why that's such a good car to buy, is that they have decluttered the dashboard. You know, all the electronic bits and pieces on the dashboard. In this digital age, when you've got electronic buttons that control this, that, everything else, people have identified that actually when it comes to just driving, simpler is less stressful for many people. I found that quite challenging. I thought, yeah, that in a sense sums up what half the problem is for us. We all now also own so many things. Have you thought about that? How many more things we own in our lives compared to, say, 20, 30 years ago? So much so that now there are websites, TV programs, magazines, and articles all over the place specifically dedicated to helping you to declutter your lives, your homes, and your clothes. I don't know if you've seen any of these things. Clothes are apparently a really big thing. Do you know about the 40 hanger rule? Apparently, you don't need more than 40 hangers to have that swish, classy outfit, the wardrobe that you require. 40 hangers is enough. Go home, count them. If you've got more, think about it. Not only that, do you know about the hanger test? What you need to do, apparently, is you need to take all of your clothes on the hangers out of the wardrobe and then put them in with the hangers the wrong way round. You've got to work out for yourself what that means. Put the hangers in the wrong way round. And then each time you take an article of clothing and you put it on, you've washed it, and you're ready to put it back, put it in the right way round. And then in 6 months' time, you come and you see how many hangers are still the wrong way round. And 6 months later, you've got a few. They're the ones that you've not worn. And they're the ones that you need to either throw away, donate to someone else, or recycle. I'm not sure what the recycle bit means, but anyway. That's just that. And then there are suggestions on all sorts of other things. These magazines were suggesting that you need to commit yourself to 5 minutes every day just to declutter certain areas of your life. But I thought to myself, yeah, you're demanding that I spend more time committing to something else. Is that really going to help me in my life? They comment on how you can tidy up your home. Decluttering for a lot of people is all about tidying your home. So all those things that are loose around your house, batteries, you need to go out and buy boxes with nice compartments in which you can store your batteries. Great, as if I haven't got more stuff. Now I'm going to go out and buy boxes to store the stuff in. It gets worse. Clips, tidies, and socks. I've got to assume that's not these socks, but special socks, that you can tidy up all the cables that come out of the back of your computer and the TV to make it neat and tidy. You can get them as well. And then remote controls. Have you noticed? Because there are so many electronic devices, remote controls are just escalating. They breed in your house like rabbits, don't they? I don't know how many you've got in your lounge. I had a frightening thought this week. I was just thinking about this. And I thought to myself, do you know, I've got 3 remote controls just associated with my car. There's the key, the one that gets me in there in the first place. I've got one for the sat-nav. I can reach the buttons. Who's that for? That's for the kids in the back. Surely they're going to cause you more problems with your sat-nav. And then one for the radio, or at least the radio that used to be in my car that's been sitting in my garage now for a few years. I'd love to declutter. If anyone wants a radio, a really nice one, come and ask me. You can have that. And I looked down here when I put these down, and I found 3 more remote controls. One controls the computer, the PowerPoint. One controls the projector, and that one switches over the inputs to the projector. And then I thought of something a little funny about what we did last week. Do you remember, I was trying to illustrate getting this balance in your life. Do you remember that we put all those little post-it notes in which we'd written, going, taking the dog for a walk, going for a walk in the country, we put them on a plank of wood, didn't we? And I put the plank of wood at the front as a balance. Do you remember what I balanced it on? It was this. And it didn't twig last week. I suddenly realised, what is this? I found this in the garage as well. It's a device to hold your remote controls. Not only is the house full of remote controls and stuff, now you've got to have more stuff to put the stuff in. Drives you to distraction. We are a consumer society and we are in love with things, and it is becoming a really huge problem. So much so that now people are concluding that our rooms are not big enough and our houses are not big enough. So we've been encouraged to aspire to better jobs that will be able to pay for bigger homes. Great. So this way of bringing quality into our lives is that we've got to earn more money by working harder, working longer. That's not going to improve your life, is it? So that we can earn more money to have a house that can own more stuff. And guess what happens when you have a bigger salary? The chances are you're going to buy more stuff to put in the house. It's insanity. And this is the spiral that we seem to be in. Do you ever wish it could be simpler? I do. And in some parts of the world, it still is. When we lived in Zambia, one of my workers lived very close to me, and he lived in a really simple home. Straightforward home. It was made out of timber and mud. That's all it was. And the timber came from the branches of trees that were all around. And he liked his home, and it was good enough for what he wanted. It just had the one problem. When you live in the tropics and there's wood associated with anything you're living around, that means termites. And you can hear them at night eating away. You wake up in the morning, you have termite dandruff. It's not dandruff, it's, well, you don't want it to go there, but termites, it's a problem. So what do you do? This guy knew he needed to do something because the termites had eaten his roof away. Did he wake up in the morning and call the estate agent, see if there are any other properties in the area? No. Did he phone the bank to try and renegotiate a new mortgage? No. Did he phone a few builders to get a quote to see what sort of remedial work they could do in his house? No. Did he go to the local DIY store and start purchasing overpriced goods from forests that are not renewable in the Far East? No. What he did is he got up in the morning and he got a big hammer and he started at work on his roof, and he removed his roof and he started on the walls of his house and he smashed his house down. He started at 8 in the morning and by 12 there was nothing left of his house. The mud he just brushed away and the wood he burnt in a big pile along with all the termites. And 3 days later, he had a completely new house that was good enough for him, his wife, and his two children. Not an estate agent in sight, no insurance costs, no solicitor's costs, no anxiety, no stress. Simple. He got the job done. You might say to me, come on, Steve, that's a little bit extreme. Surely you're not expecting us to all go and live in the garden in some hooch that you've built out of the local forest. Of course not. But what I want to do is make us aware. These are the extremes of life. And the reality is that there are people who live a simple life and it actually is relatively stress-free. And then there are the rest of us. And you are the ones who are telling me that some of the biggest clutter and stresses in your lives are the things that you have to deal with because of all these possessions that we actually own, and we don't put the two together and work out that's where the problem comes from. Last year, I had one of those dramatic revelations, a real eureka moment. And the penny dropped for me and something dawned. It was absolutely incredibly dramatic. So much so, I thought I was going to write a book about this. I was so full of this deep and meaningful revelation right up until the time when I shared it with Lorinda. Never have I seen a human being so underwhelmed with my moment of genius. Here's my revelation. This was going to be my book title. Life, stop laughing, life is all about maintenance. It's catchy, isn't it? Okay, maybe it's not catchy, but it's true. Life really is. You have to maintain things. It's a simplicity issue. Do you know, the more you have, the more you have to look after. This week, my car had to go in, MOT. Lorinda's car had to go in for service. Cars need maintenance. We thought we'd do the right thing and we'd grow vegetables and other stuff in our garden. The only problem is it's so overgrown, we had to, have all sorts of branches locked down. Gardens need maintenance. The gas boiler's packed up this week. The house needs maintenance. I've been to the doctors this week with tonsillitis. I need maintenance. Actually, I've had a haircut as well. See, life is about maintenance. I am going to write this book, I'm convinced. If you work, if you're a professional, you have to maintain your training. Work, employment needs maintenance. Relationships need maintenance. All the things that we're involved with require maintenance. And relationships and health and things like that, they're really good things, but they are impacted because of the amount of time we have to spend maintaining other things. And even the things that are supposed to make life simpler, like electronic devices that promise to make your life so simple and sweet and efficient. Try it. Computers, telephones, they all demand maintenance. They demand so much of your time. Defragging, debugging, antiviruses. Do you know the first 5 minutes that I get to use my computer every single day? It's not my computer. I mean, I think I own it. I remember paying for it. But actually, the first 5 minutes, it's this invisible guy on the other end of the internet that keeps telling me I need to update things. I'm married, I've done dating, I don't want to do it anymore, but I have to do it all the time. My telephone has applications on it, I have to update it. It all requires maintenance, and these are the labor-saving devices. It's insane, and we're in this cycle. And then the bad news is actually these things get old. And they really don't last for very long. And after they've been 3, 4, 5 years old, they're out of date and you have to buy more. This stuff, these labor-saving devices, they cost us so much. I feel quite exhausted just telling you all those things. But there's a reason I've said all of that. So what, you might say? These items in themselves are all really quite innocent. Of course they are. But they have one thing in common. They demand our time and they demand our attention. And they suck it out of our week. And that is a real problem. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus spoke to a crowd of people who have immensely less than anybody in this room. And yet this is what he said in Matthew chapter 6. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He's speaking to the crowds who, as I said, have much less than us. And he begins by saying to them, do not store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Moths and rust. He's speaking about clothing and implements and tools you might use, things like that. If he was speaking to us today, I think he might add some things. I think he might suggest also where plastics biodegrade and rubber perishes. And electronic items become outdated. And then he said where thieves break in and steal. And today he probably could add where viruses disable. And insurance and repairs and MOTs cost money and cause stress. So what does he say is the solution? But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And this brings us to the crux of the issue. Why decluttering, why simplifying is actually so important. I want you to please believe me. I'm no different from most of you. I am not actually having a crusade against possessions and things because of what they are, but because of what they do to us. They fill our lives with distractions. They occupy our attention, our efforts, our energy, our time. And ultimately, that means they are distractions for something that is so much more important than all that they offer to us or promise to offer. They're distractions from what is the life with God, a kingdom life, a life of the God who brings not stress, but peace. Last week, when we had those roundtable talks, you quite rightly pointed out that the signs of healthy spiritual life are things like having ongoing conversation, communion with the Lord, as our guide, as our counselor. How can he possibly get a look in when there are so many other things filling our lives and preventing us from seeing him, from hearing his voice? I really do believe that life is about maintenance. And that includes relationships as well. And our relationships with families, with just our normal friendships, with the community of God's people that he's brought us into. Those are really important things. But of greater importance than all of that is the life which is our relationship with God. The Christian faith is not about a thing that you do. It is about relationship. It's our relationship with God, and that needs maintenance. Try using a car sensibly if you've not treated it to a service, an MOT, or anything for 10 years. Try getting it going, and you'll find your battery will be dead. It'll just sit there, and it's been rusting in the garden for maybe 10 years. Try maintaining a house that has absolutely no work done on it for 20, 30 years, and you'll have a place where there's no central heating. Radiators are bunged up. The pipes don't work. There'll be all sorts of problems. And how can we expect to have a meaningful relationship with God unless we spend time working on that relationship? We say that Jesus is Lord. The first commandment, the commandment that Jesus said was most important, was this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, mind, and all your strength. Not just with whatever's left over after we've serviced the treasures of our life. Please hear me. I really don't have an issue with things, with possessions. But what I am doing is I'm questioning whether our attention to them or being distracted by them is actually a major influence and something that detracts from our relationship with the Lord. So the kind of decluttering that I'm speaking about this morning is one of making space in your life for God. Trying to see past the stuff that screams out at us and giving space, as we have done in our service this morning, for God. It's the principle of the Sabbath. You used to have an idea that certainly in this country, the Sabbath would be a Sunday, and it would be a whole day that would be different. Now our Sabbath is being squeezed. It's barely even 2 hours on a Sunday. And then it's a Sunday that perhaps, if we're fortunate, we can manage to be at church on that occasion. It's being squeezed all the time. But as soon as we start to think about decluttering, giving space for us to have time with God, we realize that it's not just the things of life, but it's the time that we spend in life that needs to be decluttered. Remember, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What occupies your time? What are the major things that draw on your time? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. In other words, where your focus is, those things that are so important to you, that's where you'll give your attention. And this is where it gets a little uncomfortable. Those things in themselves that we do that occupy so much of our daily life are in themselves not necessarily wrong or bad. Watching England play football in the World Cup is hardly evil. It's painful, but it's hardly evil. Leisure is a gift from God. But if our devotion to any activity occupies so much of our time and our focus that it shuts God out of our lives, then actually it becomes an abused gift that was from God. What occupies the largest part of your time? Could it be work? Tell me, is excessive work something to be encouraged, applauded, or something to be challenged? Exercise. Come on, no one can have a crack at exercise. That's good for you. We need to do more exercise, don't we? Well, Paul, speaking to Timothy, said physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things. Serving family, serving friends, and all the demands that they would make on us. Brilliant. Come on. That's a good thing. Yes, of course. Work for the church. Again, good. Because we're serving God. No one's going to criticize that, right? Well, it may be for God. But is it with God? Relationship is about being with God. It doesn't matter how noble the task that we undertake. It doesn't matter how blessed and honourable. If it means that by doing this, so we become so frazzled that God doesn't get a look in, then we still need to challenge those things. Because Satan is cunning. And one of his greatest aims is to waste the time of the saints. Waste the time that they should be spending with their Lord. Do you remember Jesus teaching again in the Sermon on the Mount about a wolf in sheep's clothing? You know the phrase. The idea, this principle, that it is a wolf, something vicious there to destroy, to take away, but actually in sheep's clothing. Looks cute, nice. It looks right on the outside. Well, we don't have that kind of farming background today, so maybe the analogy doesn't mean quite as much. What about if I changed it, though? What if I said, instead of wolf and sheep's clothing, what if I described it as being God excluding time? That's the wolf. Masquerading as an act of virtue. It looks good on the outside. I'm not having a go at what anybody does. I'm just throwing this out to say that to all of us, we need to ask ourselves, are the things that we do truly a blessing for God, for us? Or are they simply things that occupy our time? Our faith is not about things that we do. And the responsibilities that we have are not just about ticking a box. In all things, Lord, what do you say should be our priorities? Are they looking good on the outside, or are they genuinely the things we should be doing? Things, perhaps, that we just like to do ourselves. And then, of course, further on, we read the passage that Tony read to us, this very interesting conversation that Jesus had with a rich young ruler. Here's a man who fundamentally was good by almost any standard that you might like to compare for the day in that day, in that day and age. He kept all the commandments. He'd not murdered, committed adultery. He'd honored his parents. He'd not defrauded or lied. In this encounter with Jesus so far, this conversation is looking really good. This is a great guy. But the guy knows, as probably many of us know, that deep down, something is still not quite right. And he says to Jesus, "What else must I do to be right, to gain eternal life, to be right with God?" He's saying, is there something else which is in the way? How does Jesus respond? Is he nitpicking, determined to pick him up on this fault? Yeah, you've done that, but you've not done this. No. Did you notice what Jesus' response was? Verse 21, Jesus looked at him and loved him. I suspect for many in this room, we try to be followers of Jesus. We try to do what is right. In your heart of hearts, we long to live a life that is honoring to God. But we don't always get it right because the world screams other things at us. It's good in this passage to remind ourselves that Jesus' response is that he looks at us and he loves us. He knows our heart and he loves us. And he loves you so much that he doesn't want you to go through life missing out on the abundant blessings that he has for you when we start to get things in the right priority, walking in his will. And so in the case of this rich young ruler, Jesus puts his finger on the one thing that is the actual issue. "One thing you lack," he said. "Go sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me." The poor didn't really need the money. That wasn't the issue. He was saying to this rich man, "What is the one thing that you hold back from me?" Sometimes when it comes to us judging where our time is being devoted, the question we might want to ask ourselves is, what are the one thing, is the one thing that we just would not sacrifice for God? And if we know what the answer to that is, you probably know what the treasure is in your life that you're holding on to. All sorts of things may make their demands of us. All sorts of things that you tell me cause you real stress in your life. The family demands and the responsibilities and the concern, the anxiety, the worry you have about them. How are you going to deal with all of that clutter in your life? Lots of honourable things in there. Your home. So many of you talk to me about being stressed. You don't know when the roof's going to fall off, when the heating's going to pack up. I know that one well. How are you going to manage it all? And it all adds to the stress and the clutter. The things that occupy your life that you know you've got to spend time researching before you ever buy them. Trying to find the cheapest so you don't waste the precious resources. But then you're going to have to maintain and then eventually replace. What are we going to do with those aspects of clutter? The church and your involvement here and the potential pressures there. What do we do with the other stuff that just clutters our life up? What do we need to focus our attention on? And then our health and the way we try to control it and manage it and try to have interests that we think will be good to maintain a good health. Wherever you struggle, I'm going to suggest to you there may be things that you need to declutter. I cannot give you an ABC of what you should do for your circumstances. But I believe Jesus has already given us the answer to how you deal with every one of those issues that quite rightly create stress and cause complications in your existence. And it's this also from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, 33. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. What do you treasure? Is there anything you're unwilling to surrender? What is it that occupies your time that maybe detracts from your ability to spend time with God? Family, home, possessions, car, all the other stuff, health. How do you declutter? The thing I want to encourage you to do is take every one of those things first and foremost to God. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Seek your Lord before any of those things, and those things he promises will fall into their place. And how do you really spend that time, that quality time, seeking him? Well, we'll look at that next week. The key for this morning is I want us to just be aware. Be aware of the stuff in life that fills our life so much that we don't have space for God. You can't have a relationship if there isn't space in your life for that relationship. And decluttering, simplifying, is just the starting point. And you've probably now got 10,000 questions in your mind about where you go from here. Well, that's the point of having a reflective service. You start to take it further and ask the Lord, seek him, and you will find him.